This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Hi, this is Joyce Teo and you're listening to Health Check. Today, we're going to look at an exciting development in a relatively new treatment for depression. But first, let me tell you about this treatment that's currently available here. It's called TMS or transcranial magnetic stimulation. TMS uses magnetic fields to stimulate and reset the specific part of the brain that regulates mood. It is used for treatment-resistant or what we call stubborn depression. I first wrote about it in 2015 when a private center brought it into Singapore. A few hospitals later introduced the treatment, including the Institute of Mental Health, or IMH. So what's amazing about this treatment is that it is non-invasive. It does not involve surgery or medications. And what's even more exciting is that a personalized and potentially more effective approach to TMS is in the works. So there's a clinical pilot by IMH and the Yong Lu Lin School of Medicine at the National University of Singapore that aims to study the efficacy of this treatment. To find out more about this treatment, I will be speaking to two experts. Dr. Torpen Chen is a senior consultant at the Mood and Anxiety Department and the head of Neurostimulation Service at the Institute of Mental Health. And Associate Professor Thomas Yeo is from the Center for Sleep and Connection at the Yong Lu Lin School of Medicine. Hi, Dr. Tor and Prof. Yeo.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Joyce.
So, Dr. Tor, can you start first by telling us what exactly is TMS?
Thanks for the question, Joyce. Happy to share a little bit about this. TMS stands for transcranial magnetic stimulation. And essentially, it is stimulating the neurons of the brain using an alternating magnetic field. Basically, it's using magnetic pulses to exercise the brain. In this particular context, and why you're speaking to a psychiatrist about it, is that it's been used to treat treatment-resistant depression in Singapore since November 2015. Basically, you have a TMS machine, and it essentially converts electrical energy out from the socket into magnetic energy through a what we call figure of eight coil, basically a copper coil that looks like an eight. And Professor Yeo might explain the physics of it better later. But essentially, you get a very strong magnetic pulse coming out of the coil that you can direct in exactly the right spot. And what that means is you can find the right part of the brain to target and treat depression. And for patients who have failed standard treatment for depression, that's psychotherapy or counseling and or medication, using this treatment gives them a 30 to 50% chance of getting much better. The TMS only goes to exactly where you want it to be, in this case, the brain, and the side effects are usually very mild, although there are potential rare side effects, and that's why it needs to be prescribed by a doctor.
Right. You mentioned it targets a specific part of the brain, right?
Absolutely.
And if it's so amazing, so why do we need this new personalized approach? How is it different from what we have now?
Joyce, very glad you asked that question. So what we want to do is that we know that depression, in a sense, and this is overgeneralization, but I think is useful for this conversation. There is depression for the average person lives in a certain spot. And that spot is actually called the subgenual anterior cingulate gyrus. The problem is, and Professor, you'll correct me if I'm wrong about this, it's somewhere almost in the center of the brain. It's actually quite deep. And so TMS only stimulates the outermost part of the brain, what we'll call the outer cortex. And the challenge is, we don't know exactly which part of the cortex for each individual patient is right for that patient. What we know is that if you treat 1,000 people and you look at where, which part of the brain is the best part to target with TMS, you'll find on average it's going to be a certain spot. The problem is that certain spot isn't right for everybody. And that's why you give them standard TMS, the average target for the population. Half of them get well, the other half don't. And research from Professor Thomas Yeo and his colleagues in the field have shown us why. It's because the other half of the people have a spot that's a little bit off from that average spot. I mean, essentially, no one's exactly 5'8", for example. Normal human variation creates a situation where if we don't have individualized targeting of the treatment, you're essentially hoping that your patient is similar to the average patient for which the treatment works.
You see, so everybody has a different spot then that works.
When I speak to my colleagues, other doctors, and say, we're going to do an MRI, an image of the brain, and we're going to find the right spot to do this. They look at me and say, I look at MRIs all the time. What's the big deal? You send the guy to the radiologist, he scans it. Half an hour later, I can see the entire brain. The challenge is doctors think about something called structural MRI, literally what it looks like physically in 3D space. But that's not how it works. The same brain can, for two different people, can look almost identical on the outside, but how the activity is on the inside can be very, very different. And this is easy to understand. Most humans look reasonably similar to each other, but we know the huge difference and variation in many different human aspects, from intelligence to the ability to sing, physical ability, yet the brain, on average, looks roughly the same. It's because it's not how it looks. It's how it functions. It's how it works. That's where the work of Professor Thomas Yeo has really come out very recently to help us unlock how the brain works. You can actually see not how the brain looks, but how it works. The stuff that Professor Thomas Yeo and his colleagues do is so advanced and in a sense so surreal that it really looks like magic to me.
It sounds very complicated. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. I mean, how do you find that spot then? So tell us about your technique, Prof Yeo.
Right. So I need to first start by explaining what is functional MRI. Dr. Toh was saying that at a hospital, typically the MRI is used to image anatomy, right? So it can review tumors or cysts in different body parts and so on. But the kind of MRI I'm talking about is called functional MRI. So functional MRI tries to image the function of the human brain. So it actually does not measure neurons directly, but it works on the fact that when a brain region is more active, it actually uses up a lot more energy. And so there'll be more blood flow and oxygen being delivered to that brain region. And turns out that blood with more oxygen has different magnetic properties from blood with less oxygen. And so the MRI scanner is able to pick that up. Now, within functional MRI itself, you can divide it into task-based functional MRI and resting state functional MRI. So in task-based fMRI, you typically ask the patient or the participant to do a particular task. Let's say you have a brain tumor patient. The doctor might ask the patient to do a language task to map out basically the language regions in the brain. And so then when the surgeon is taking on the tumor, the surgeon will work hard to try to avoid the language network. Another use for task-based fMRI, I was looking this up, is that you can actually use that to communicate with patients who are in a coma. There was a famous study where essentially they were able to communicate with this patient by asking the patient to imagine playing tennis. If the answer is yes, imagine yourself walking around home. If the answer is no.
I see. So you can talk to them. They can hear
you. Yes. So it turns out that there is a fraction of patients who are actually aware, even though they're in a coma. Resting state functional MRI is very different, right? You actually just ask the participant to just lie in the scanner and do nothing, which sounds crazy. But it turns out that even if we are lying in the scanner at rest doing nothing, right, we're actually daydreaming and so on, the brain is actually very active. And essentially, this is what we're doing in this current personalized TMS. We're asking the patient to lie at rest in the MRI scanner and then using a functional MRI to map out the networks of that particular individual's brain and use that to find the right location for the TMS targeting.
Right. So with the current TMS method, you don't go through this MRI scan, right?
We use a tape measure.
Right.
You think that with such an advanced technology, which actually was only created in 1985, you would do something better than a tape measure. But around the world, the standard of treatment for using TMS for treatment-resistant depression is using a tape measure to estimate roughly where on the skull we should put the coil. And so what Professor Thomas Yeo and his group's offering us is literally the future. And to me, it's magic.
Well, has this been done overseas?
There has been one country in the world where this technology is technically standard treatment, and that's North America. And it's called the SAINT treatment, or Stanford Accelerated Intelligent Neuromodulation Therapy. They come with great names, I know. It went through a series of trials, and in September 2022, it got approved. And so technically, it's standard treatment in North America, except I think it's only available in about 6 sites in North America. because the technology required to do this, the kind of advanced and brain analysis that Professor Thomas Yeo and his colleagues are doing, A, is very, very rare, and B, it's very expensive. In North America, today, you can make an appointment to go to Boston, and for somewhere in the ballpark of $20,000, you can get this 1 week intensive treatment, not as part of a trial, but just as part of routine care. That's a major challenge. And at the same time, it's a very clear, what we'll call proof of concept to the whole world that you have an entirely new way of treating depression.
Dr. Tor, before we move on to talk about personalized TMS, right, or what you call the individually neuronavigated accelerated TMS approach, can you tell us a little bit about depression and, you know, why it is sometimes so hard to treat?
There are many, many different types of depression. And some types of depression, in fact, many, mild depression, doing counseling or what we would technically call psychotherapy works very well. You don't need to see a doctor. You don't need medication. If it gets mild to moderate types of depression, very often you would see a doctor, sometimes a specialist like a psychiatrist, and often what we call pharmacotherapy or medication will be prescribed. This is extremely common all around the world. It works for a certain group of people, but a significant minority, sometimes majority, don't get well. That's treatment-resistant depression. For these people, not only are there very, very few treatments available, like we discussed earlier, the time taken to get there is immense. Counseling or psychotherapy usually is measured in at least weeks, if not months. So you're talking 3, 6, 9, or maybe more months of regular once a week or more therapy counseling sessions, so a standard course. Medication for depression, minimum, you're talking 3 months of treatment before you know whether it's working or not. And then you would try a different one if it doesn't work. And that could take another 3 months. So it often takes months to years for a standard treatment course for depression around the world to be done. And imagine if someone you know has this horrible illness where every day you feel life is meaningless. You don't feel like doing anything. You feel that suicide or ending your life is the best way to get out of this misery. And we ask you to try this for another 6 or 12 months and see how it goes. It's amazing that more people don't suffer morbidity or side effects or problems with depression. With this treatment, you can get well in a week. Mm-hmm. And what our colleagues in North America have shared with us is that for many people, taking a week off from work or family engagements or from school or whatever, getting treated, like going for a surgery, you know, you can have a couple of days of rest after that, and then you go back to your life.
Oh, that sounds amazing, actually. But I was wondering how it compares with the current gold standard treatment for depression, which is electroconvulsive therapy or ECT.
ECT, generally, each session is about a half day treatment. The treatment itself is about 5 minutes. You spend the other 3 hours and 55 minutes waiting in some medical facility. That's unfortunately very typical because it requires general anesthesia and it requires two things that Singaporeans really hate. One, they have to have a needle put inside their arm. The second thing which Singaporeans really, really do not like to have is to fast for 6 hours. We have found from experience that patients hate being hungry. But then you ask them to do this 3 times a week for 4 weeks, it's tough. And so that's how ECT is done, whereas the current treatment, accelerated, individually neuronavigated TMS, each treatment is 9 minutes long. You do it every hour on the hour for 10 hours a day, and you do it for 5 days in a row. It's one solid week of your time, and you get response rates, or rather improvement rates from depression.
But this personalized approach to TMS, I mean, if it works, it sounds like it's going to be the newest gold standard.
And that is a distinct possibility we're trying to investigate. And the advantage of that is that personalized TMS has much fewer side effects than ECT. ECT, perhaps worth explaining just a little bit, stands for electroconvulsive therapy. This is the current gold standard for treatment-resistant depression, as you say, Joyce. It involves inducing a medically controlled seizure under general anesthesia. So an anesthetist will put the patient under general anesthesia. When the patient is fully asleep, we pass an alternating electrical current through the patient's brain to make all the brain cells fire off at the same time. That's a seizure. And there are two big effects from this. One is that the brain cells release a lot of neurochemicals, like serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine. And there's a second effect that follows from this, something called neurogenesis, or rather growth of brain cells. The brain cells actually get bigger. There's more, the brain gets bigger after electroconvulsive therapy. And through a combination of these factors and other factors, it is the current gold standard for treatment-resistant depression. Easily 50% of people that fail current standard treatment for depression, medication, counseling, psychotherapy, they get fully well with ECT treatment.
Okay, so how do you decide? I mean, it's the gold standard, yes, but when do you send somebody for the current TMS and for the personalized one and ECT in the future?
I'm very glad you asked that question, Joyce. We actually published a cost-effectiveness analysis based on Singapore data. If you had to choose four treatments to treat depression in Singapore, what is a sequence of treatments that's most cost-effective? And in Singapore, that's two rounds of antidepressant medication. If that doesn't work, the third-line treatment that's most cost-effective is standard TMS treatment, the current treatment that we have, not the individually neuronavigated accelerated TMS. And the fourth-line treatment is electroconvulsive therapy. So for most people with common or standard major depressive disorder or treatment-resistant depression, TMS should be done before electroconvulsive therapy. There are exceptions. Like I mentioned earlier, there are many different types of depression. If you have some types of depression, for example, something called psychotic depression, where people lose touch with reality because it's such severe depression, or depression with catatonic features or catatonia, you would jump straight to electroconvulsive therapy rather than the first three lines of treatment because the first three lines don't work for this, only ECT does. For the average patient, TMS should be done before electroconvulsive therapy.
Right. And how about the current TMS then? How many sessions do you usually need?
We need 30 sessions once a day over 6 weeks, Monday to Friday. Nothing on the weekends.
I see. So this is so much faster, the personalized approach.
Much, much faster. And again, right. Imagine if somebody with depression who has a horrible illness that is stopping them from leading their lives. Are you going to want a treatment that takes 6 weeks, 4 weeks, or 1 week?
Right. Well, 1 week is amazing. You just take leave for 1 week, right?
Yes.
Actually, for this. But how do I know whether it works? And even then, with the pilot in the US, it's not like 100% results, right?
You're absolutely right. The results are in the 80 to 90% range where patients get so much better that they no longer qualify for the diagnosis of depression. We say you have entered remission for depression. 80 to 90% of people who get the real treatment, this individually neuronavigated accelerated TMS, they get to that stage in a week. And we have evidence just published in the past month that on average, it lasts for about 6 months. So Joyce, you're absolutely right. It doesn't work for everybody. There's still some people where it doesn't work. That's probably because depression is heterogeneous or we still need to improve the algorithm. The third reason, some people just need a little bit more treatment. And we actually hear this from our colleagues in North America who are using this, that some people that get a little bit better with 1 week of intensive treatment, but not well enough, they do a second week and many of them seem to get well. But it doesn't work for everything. It doesn't work for example, if you have normal sadness, if you have relationship problems with colleagues or friends or family, this doesn't cure any of that at all.
Okay. I don't think you want to pay so much for it, actually. So how much will it cost in Singapore when it becomes available?
That's a really good question. And what we can say is that right now we're doing two pilots and cost is not an issue for people who want to participate. And what the final cost will be is a complex issue regarding how the costs are going to be in the future. Because remember, this is a technology-based treatment. It's like your smartphone. Every year, you have rapid changes to the technology. Stuff I was doing 9 years ago is completely out of date now. So we expect that the costs for the technology, for the manpower, for the setup, for the MRI scans and the analysis are all very dynamic. What we want to do, of course, is try and make it accessible, mainstream, and affordable to everybody. That's one reason why we're doing these two pilots, to also try to get this to be standard subsidized treatment, like how we got standard TMS subsidized by the government.
So I wanted to go back to Prof. Yeo again. I mean, how does it work So if I go in, how would you be able to find the right spot for me?
So basically, the patient will come in and then we'll obtain a resting state functional MRI scan. And from there, my group will do the analysis of the data in order to map out for each individual their individualized brain networks. So first of all, imaging studies have shown that one of the networks that's most affected in depression is known as the default network, right? And the default network includes itself the subgenual cingulate cortex region that Dr. Tor already mentioned. The default network is thought to be involved in internal thinking, right? When you're daydreaming or when you're thinking about the future, thinking about the past, basically when you're ruminating, this is the network that's being active. And it is widely believed that part of the reason why people feel depressed is the default network function might be abnormal, right? We're targeting the salience network. This salience network is what is known as anti-correlated with the default network. So this means that the functional MRI signal goes up and down in opposite direction. So the theory is that when we target the salience network in the frontal lobe, we're able to modulate the default network indirectly, right? And in doing so, it improves the patient's symptom.
One interesting hypothesis that's coming out, or explanation for why people are depressed and why this sort of treatment works, could be changing the direction of information flow. There's still a lot of work to be done here, but there's a very exciting data coming up from individually neuronavigated accelerated TMS trials that when help-seeking people who are looking for treatment go for a resting state functional MRI, some of them have this seat of depression, this subgenual anterior cingulate cortex or gyrus, that seems to light up first, and then the part of the frontal lobe, the frontal lobe is literally the front part of our brains, responsible for a lot of what we call executive function, or basically who we are, our personality, that sort of thing. That suggests that perhaps the depression center is telling our executive side, telling us, our personality, life is bad. Life is meaningless. Why bother? But this is a hypothesis, but what happened with people who responded to this individually neuronavigated accelerated TMS? The direction of information flow seems to have changed. So instead of having the emotional brain telling us life is terrible, we, our personality, when you're well, tell the depression part of the brain, no, life is pretty okay. Life is all right. That old story where you ask people with depression or mental illness, why can't you just snap out of it? And the reason is they can't. The highway is going in one direction. And what this treatment could be doing is reversing the information flow so that we are able to control our emotions rather than emotions controlling us. This is very much a clinician's view of it. The science part, like I said, it's so advanced, and really looking forward to what Professor Thomas Yeo and his colleagues are doing in this field, because it's helping people like me understand what's going through our patients' mind more and have more treatment options to help them.
Right. We can actually finally one day say you can snap out of it after 1 week.
With the right treatment.
Yeah. So with TMS, you are actually targeting the outer part of the brain.
Yes.
And then indirectly through another network to get into this dysfunctional part of the brain.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So with personalized approach, you're looking for this exact part of the brain.
So basically with resting state functional fMRI, right, you are able to map out the brain networks at every location of the cerebral cortex, right? Actually, we can map it over the entire cerebral cortex, right? But in general, clinical trials tends to be conservative, right? Because everyone has already targeted the frontal lobe. So we will target the salience network in the frontal lobe. But what is interesting is that these networks typically are highly distributed. Like the salience network distributed in the front of the brain, in the back of the brain, in the middle of the brain, on the side of the brain. Same with the default network. And the reason why we still would prefer to target the salience network in the frontal lobe is because we know that it is safe, right? So even if it's not better than the tape measure, right, we know that it will not create harm in the patients.
I think just to clarify that part, there are different places you could target on the outer part of the brain to get to the deeper parts of the brain. So it's not just that one part. There could be parts on other targets on the outer surface of the brain to target the same deeper part of the brain. The analogy I use for my patients is like, let's say you are a Grab food driver. If the customer only gives you a six-digit area code, you've got to go to that block of flats and search the entire block of flats for the person who ordered your food. That's, in a nutshell, standard TMS. We think it's somewhere in this block, and we try to target it, and we hope that we hit it right. And for the Grab driver, it's like, can he deliver the food in time and get his pay? What Professor Thomas Yeo's algorithm does is it gives you the exact address in that block of flats to deliver that food, to target that spot or deliver whatever you need to do. That's the resolution that you're given. That's why we believe the improvement in the outcome is so much better, because it gives you that very high resolution target of exactly where you need to go, rather than saying it's roughly in that block. It's sort of like finding this room, you know, and it's like we can get to the SPH building, but coming to this room, if we didn't have this address, we would take a long time to get here.
Okay, great. So basically, I mean, from what I understand, so you're saying the salience network is kind of found in different parts of the outer core of the brain, and then you want to find the right one to get to this specific part. And for this clinical trial, we are going through the salience network in the frontal lobe of the brain.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's good. So, okay, yeah. Can we talk about the pilot?
There are actually two pilot trials going on, one funded by Temasek Foundation, who shares the vision that we have of having a new novel way of rapidly treating depression. And we're recruiting 20 participants for that. And we have a second grant from the National Medical Research Council, who is helping us answer, I think, more scientific questions about what is the best spot and is it worth doing all this work to get the best spot? So we're recruiting 70 people for that. So in total, we're recruiting 90 people over hopefully the next 2-3 years. And we'll be able to answer in Singapore, does this sort of treatment work and is it worth the money?
Right, 2-3 years, that's pretty long.
Everybody who comes into the trial gets real treatment. The first 20 from Temasek Foundation, they all get what we think will be the best treatment. That's using Professor Yeo's algorithm to find the individual treatment target. For the other 70 people, randomizing them into two groups, 35 will get the same treatment as the first 20 from Temasek Foundation. The other 35, do not worry, they are getting real treatment. The only difference is the target is our current tape measure target, so which is a one-size-fits-all approach. Mm. And we're trying to ask this, even if, let's say, the individually neuronavigated treatment is better than a tape measure, it requires advanced analytic skills that Professor Thomas Yeo and only a few of his colleagues in Singapore have, a very, very small handful, compared to a tape measure, which my daughter can do. So the question is that difference, is that improvement in outcome going to be worth taxpayers' money? That's a question that we aim to answer as well. Not just does it work well enough for the price, and is it something that we want to make available to more people in Singapore and the region?
I see. Okay. So these people are the ones with treatment-resistant depression?
Absolutely already. Right, Joyce, yes.
Are they already at IMH?
Well, some of them will be from IMH, and I suspect that we'll also have referrals from outside of IMH. The reason I say this is actually in the past, actually relatively recent development, in the past year, I've gotten almost as much referrals for standard TMS from private psychiatrists than from my own colleagues in the Institute of Mental Health. People with depression, they want help and they search the internet for it and they find this sort of treatment and they ask around for it. So increasingly, they're asking their private psychiatrists, do you have this TMS? Most of them will say no. And then some of them will say, you can try IMH or NUHS has standard TMS. KTPH also has it. SGH is also developing a capability. And we helped train up their teams over the past 5-6 years. And they offer the standard TMS as well. So I suspect it'll be both IMH patients as well as patients from outside IMH will be coming for this.
Okay. So very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the future. I mean, even though I know this is going to take 2-3 years, right? But I was doing a search and the US Food and Drug Administration has approved TMS for OCD, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder, migraines, and also to help people stop smoking. So is
absolutely
this something
right.
that will happen in Singapore? Because, you know, you mentioned the salience network, right, Prof. Yeo? I mean, that's something that affects other conditions as well.
Yeah, I think that the thinking among psychiatrists and brain scientists is that, you know, using resting state function MRI, you can map out all the networks in the brain, right? And the thinking is that if we target the right network or the right location for every individual, depending on the disorder, we will be able to improve the symptoms of the patient. So assuming this is successful, right, we'll definitely be interested in treating or thinking about how to treat other disorders as well.
I see. That sounds very exciting.
I'm just going to second Professor Yeo's excitement, because in theory, exactly what he said, if you can identify what we call a behavioral phenotype, or basically some kind of external behavior or something, or sometimes even internal behavior, like you mentioned OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, some of that is internal obsessions. Nobody else can see it. But if you have something stable that you can see or identify or quantify, in theory, Professor Yeo's technique could identify which parts of the brain in a resting state functional MRI are related, possibly causal, but definitely related to that thing. There has been one very interesting study just published that looked at religious fundamentalism and resting state functional MRI markers. In brief, it's on the right side of the brain, right frontal orbital. Those are technical terms, but they are able to find for people in North America, whom they classify as having religious fundamentalism, that certain parts of the brain on the right side are lit up and a bit more active, and this may be part of where this sort of thing comes from. In theory, you could do it for, well, political party, preference.
I'm sure you want to raise this point here.
Yeah, you've got to edit that part out. Right? No. But that, coming back to where we actually practice, mental illness or illness, anything to do with the brain, and there are many conditions in the brain which there are no good treatments. Autism, for example, other neurodevelopmental conditions where there is essentially no good treatment today. With this advanced technique, you could potentially find which part of the brain is responsible for a certain disorder or a certain symptom and use a non-invasive way to target it and modulate or change its activity to get it back towards normal. I will put in a plug that this is non-invasive. There could also be invasive ways of doing this. Neurosurgeons literally open up people's skulls every day, put implants into it. And Professor Yeo mentioned right at the beginning that his work is already being used by neurosurgeons to find out which part of the brains they don't want to touch when they do surgery. And so his work is not just going to be useful for psychiatrists like myself. It'll be useful for anybody that deals with the brain.
Wow, that sounds very exciting. I mean, there are a lot of promises, I guess. But then when you mentioned the scan and the treatment, that sounds very expensive as well. I went to IMH, there's just one chair down there for this treatment. So one person at a time.
There are two questions in there. Let me see if I unpack that a little bit. One is, I would say, cost, and not just of the scan, which you mentioned, but of the entire thing, because you require a person to do this, and manpower is the highest cost in any, almost any medical healthcare facility. So there's a cost of doing this. And the other one is what we call generalizability or patient access. There's no point if there is one amazing center in whole Southeast Asia, you're never going to be able to make a dent in the larger demand for this sort of thing. So the cost issue, like I said, I'm just a doctor, so the money side I leave to, you know, the finance people. But I will say this, we managed to get standard TMS subsidized. The people in the ministry have shared a similar vision and saw that it represented a paradigm shift in the approach towards treating depression and possibly other severe mental illness. So they subsidized. I was ecstatic when I did that 2 years ago. So there is every possibility that if the treatment outperforms the standard treatment that we have today, by such a large margin, and right now, it suggests that it may be a really large margin. It may be twice as good in 1/6 the time if we had the same results that that the Americans have. You could, even though you might have to do a relatively expensive scan, it may be worth the price, because the Ministry of Health is looking not just the cost, they're looking at value-based care. So the cost part, that's what the research is for. Singapore is funding this research so we can answer these questions. Is it worth the value? Second important question you ask, even if it's valuable, if there's only one chair, that's just not really fair. I'm going to turn this a little bit around to another scenario that may be useful. We've all heard of the National Kidney Foundation, And literally, we have people who have to have dialysis usually 3 times a week. Each time is 4-6 hours or so, half a day, every single day for the rest of their lives. It's not pleasant. Their ability to work and function is significantly decreased, not just because of treatment time, but because the treatment generally is tiring for a lot of people. But the alternative is death. And so NKF, for example, and other foundations, and the Ministry of Health, of course, has managed to create enough capacity to meet demand. That's a lot of dialysis machines. So I'm hopeful that within my lifetime, our lifetimes, that we'll have this sort of treatment, if it works, that we'll have this sort of treatment widely accessible the same way that no patient with kidney failure today is denied care. I'm hoping that in the future, we can say no patient with treatment-resistant depression that'll respond to this individually neuronavigated TMS will be denied treatment because there's no chair. That's our hope.
Okay, and then the side effects is...
Every treatment can have side effects. There are 2 broad categories of side effects of individually neuronavigated accelerated TMS. One is common and mild, the other is rare and severe. Common mild, headaches, noise-induced deafness because you're hearing a loud clicking noise. I'm not worried about that. Headache goes away very quickly, and we give people earplugs. Not worried about common and mild side effects. 2 rare and severe side effects. One is having a seizure. Because we are exercising the brain, some people can have a seizure or a fit. They don't develop epilepsy. It's a one-time thing. It's rare, but it can happen. The other is inducing the opposite of depression, and that's a condition called mania. You don't want to be too happy. It's bad for your health as well. And both are very rare but severe. They happen in roughly 3 to 6 per 100,000 treatments. What that means is if you have 100,000 sessions of TMS, and that's really a lot of TMS, you may have, even if everything is correct, there may be 3 to 6 times that that person has a seizure or mania. You can't have TMS if you have metal in your brain. If you have titanium plates or you have stents from stroke or hearing aids implants, I'm sorry, you can't have TMS simply because the magnetic wave will heat up and either destroy the equipment or hurt you. But other than that, people have TMS. For medications, there are many considerations, many drug interactions, many concerns how it affects other parts of the body and other conditions, induced diabetes. That's why we go to medical school. We actually spend time learning this sort of thing. With TMS, it's a lot safer, a lot simpler. But like you said, it needs chairs.
And in the future, if this personalized approach works, you will probably go straight to the personalized TMS, right? Instead of the current TMS.
Well, that's the crystal ball. Professor Yu and I are looking at each other. And that's a possibility. And I'm hopeful, and my colleagues are hopeful, that perhaps within 10 years, we don't call this advanced treatment or last-line treatment. It'll just be standard treatment. That's something that I wish all my patients with depression have right now.
Yeah, that'd be great, going to a TMS center. It takes away the stigma as well, actually.
Absolutely. Slowly.
Thank you very much for your time today, Dr. Toh and Prof. Yu.
Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you, Joyce, for the time.
Well, that's a wrap for Health Check, a podcast series by The Straits Times. I'm Joyce Teo. Don't forget to share this podcast episode with your friends and family. If you'd like to read my articles, we have links in the podcast text description below.
Send your feedback to podcast@sbh.com.sg. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or within our Straits Times app. Thanks for listening.